You are Locked On Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. This is a daily Warriors podcast, and I am Danny Lurie, your host, so happy to have you with us for this episode. As a part of the Locked On Podcast Network, we're doing a fun thing this week where we are doing what we're calling crossover episodes. And so what that is it's two hosts in the network, so we have podcasts for all 30 teams, and we're talking about it. And the first one is the Warriors' first-round playoff opponent last year, Ben DuBose and Locked On Rockets. So we talk, of course, about both teams. Ends up being a fair amount of me talking about the Warriors, but it was a lot of fun to really talk shop with somebody. And that series has been overshadowed so much by everything that happened since, and both teams have changed significantly since then. So it was a lot of fun to have a conversation about where those two teams are, and they have been real rivals over the years. So our conversation runs about 20 minutes. I hope you enjoy it.
Danny LaRue, how's it going today, buddy?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing all right. Ready for training camp to finally get here. As part of the Locked On Podcast Network, one of the things that across the network we've been doing more are crossover shows where hosts from two different teams get together. I've just kind of run through your background as the host of Locked On Warriors and, of course, a writer with the Sporting News, host with Real GM Radio. And, you know, the Warriors and Rockets have had some big playoff series the last 2 years. Of course, the Warriors have won 8 of the 10 games, but they shouldn't be real rivals going into this year, given that the Warriors are probably a 70-plus win team again. So I want to start off with a question less about the Rockets and more about the Warriors in general. Stylistically, if there is a team or a style that could give the Warriors any kind of trouble, what do you think it is? And this could be anything from offense first to defense first, small versus big, slow tempo versus up tempo. Is there any sort of a style that might cause the Warriors problems with this new roster, less depth and, well, more Kevin Durant?
There are a couple different things that can give them trouble. The biggest ones are actually more personnel-based, and I think we've seen that with the Warriors over the years, is that certain kind of guys give them trouble. For Curry, it can be bigger players that are still agile. Avery Bradley, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope are good examples. But from a team perspective, there are a couple of big things. One is being able to run and run effectively, because the Warriors, and this will be true, I think, even without Andrew Bogut, they're a very good half-court defensive team, but they're defense in transition isn't always that great. Sometimes they have guys that are caught out of position, and you know, it's a different thing. And so teams, incidentally, like the Rockets, might be able to take advantage of that when the Warriors miss shots. Of course, that'll be, we'll see how often that happens. But also running off makes can work against them. And then the other part of it, which is very important, and Cleveland was a good example of this, is that you need to be solid in all aspects. That means not turning the ball over too much, playing solid defense pretty much every possession. And so that baseline of quality allows you, when that team is playing a really good night, to beat the Warriors.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It seems a little unconventional. I think anytime you see a team that plays the style the Warriors do with so much perimeter success, there's a tendency to think that the way to beat them is just be bigger, be tougher. And the Rockets in the playoffs the last 2 years would seem to be an example of that traditional thinking, with teams that were kind of built around Dwight Howard and the interior presence. But what we saw, you know, it didn't play out that way. Really, I think if you want to beat the Warriors, you need a team that's, you know, as you were alluding to, more efficient, is able, you know, running after makes is one strategy, but in general, just getting out in transition, because they're such a good half-court defensive team. And there's a tendency, I think, among people that just follow the game superficially to think that, well, the Warriors are this three-point shooting juggernaut, so can they really compete on a intense half-court level? And the answer is defensively, yes, they can. So when you're the Rockets, a team like they've been the last 2 years with Dwight Howard, Donatus Moneyunis, Josh Smith up front, in some ways that kind of played into the Warriors' hands. Is that a fair assessment?
Sure. I mean, you can go to that nth degree and actually work out pretty well. We'll get a test of that with the Utah Jazz this year, who have basically bet on being big, yeah, but it could work. And Boris Diaw has actually been a player that has done well against the Warriors. So we'll see if they can actually improve maybe off of what they've done in prior years. But you do have to have that core competence. And a point that you brought up in terms of efficiency is also very important because the more efficient the opposing team's offense is, the less transition looks the Warriors get. And while we talked about their weakness in transition defense comparatively, their transition offense is insane and will only get stronger with Kevin Durant as long as they can give those guys enough rest. And so the more you can do with that, and another big question mark, and the Rockets will play into this, is whether they're susceptible to offensive rebounding. There have been moments in the past where that has been a big issue. Tristan Thompson had some nice moments in both finals runs, and Mozgov before they played him off the floor in 2015. And so if that works a little bit better against their new look front line, that could be another potentially exploitable weakness.
Yeah. Efficiency is an interesting word because it ties into what I was going to ask you about with regards to James Harden. When you think of Harden's performance against the Rockets the last 2 years, particularly the two playoff performances, I'd say it's pretty mixed. There have been some games in which Harden was absolutely breathtaking, you know, scoring 40 a game on 50% shooting from the field, just crazy numbers, crazy good. And then you have the other games, like Game 5 of the 2015 Western Conference Finals, when Harden, of course, had 12 turnovers, the Rockets lost the game. And it's been my take that the Warriors are less concerned with, you know, raw scoring and more about the efficiency. And this is a superficial way of looking at it, but the way that I look at the way the Warriors organize themselves against the Rockets, it's less about stopping James Harden, the scorer, and more about stopping James Harden, the playmaker. And you can say the same thing, in my opinion, about how they defended Russell Westbrook in this year's Western Conference Finals. And where that's cost Houston, in my opinion, is that, you know, yes, Harden, especially if he's on, he might can torch Klay Thompson and get his 30 to 40 points. But if he's not able to get the rest of the team involved, the Warriors feel like that over the course of a game, you know, their superior depth, their superior talent is going to win out. I guess I'm curious how you see that, because to me, it's a small but key distinction that, you know, while they're okay with someone like Harden or Westbrook getting their points, it seems like the emphasis is stopping their ability to, you know, get their teammates involved. And in the case of Harden, that means forcing more turnovers when he tries to do that.
That's certainly a reasonable way of looking at it. And it does depend a little bit on the talent, not only that player themselves, but depending on the other individuals, you know, like how good their surrounding teammates are. But with Harden, it's a particularly notable example because one of the differences between the Warriors and most teams is that they change the way they defend players over the course of a series. A lot of times that's actually because they start with a suboptimal thing and then they figure it out. With that happened with Harden, they changed defenders on him numerous times. Actually, most notably happened with Kyrie in the finals, where they started with Curry on him and then eventually switched to Klay Thompson. But one of the key attributes of this Warriors philosophy is the idea of forcing tough shots. And there are certain individuals in the league who are really good at making those. Harden can be one of those, though he can be a little bit less consistent about it. He's amazing at getting to the line and things like that. But tough shots, it comes and goes with him. Kyrie's actually really good at that and was part of what killed the Warriors in Game 5 of the Finals. So those superlative individual guys can do that, but it really does hinge to a degree also on the surrounding talent, and that's why this Rockets team is so compelling, is because while there are other deficiencies, they have a lot more capability offensively surrounding Harden now than they did last year.
Yeah, and that was what I was going to flow into, is that, you know, the ultimate X factor for the Rockets this year is how much of Harden's inefficiency, these high turnover games, were because of poor decisions by him, and how much was because, well, he didn't have playmakers around him, so they were very limited with regards to how they could space the floor, have secondary creators, that kind of thing. And so when you're spilling some of the minutes from the likes of Corey Brewer with someone like Eric Gordon, and you're replacing minutes from Josh Smith with minutes from Ryan Anderson, you've got a lot more playmakers on the floor, and in theory, that should make Harden a lot more efficient. It's really interesting what you said earlier about the up-tempo system potentially being a good match against the Warriors. One of the other things that I'm curious about, the Warriors got all the headlines, of course, for getting Kevin Durant, but they lost a lot of depth in the process. And we've seen a lot of guys, I can think of Matt Moore at CBS, who have been killing how poor the Warriors' bench looks. What's your view on the team's depth? Is the team's depth still quality, or are there real concerns over how deep Golden State can go with its second unit?
it's a little bit more of a regular season concern, just because when you can play these guys 40-plus minutes in the playoffs, there just are not that many minutes to spare. But certainly it becomes a larger thing if guys get hurt, because they don't have real replacements for just about anybody in that kind of a circumstance. Because when you think about an injury, and the Rockets, of course, have dealt with this in recent years, as the Warriors have a little bit less, is when you have an injury, not only are you losing that guy's minutes, but usually the person who you're scaling up, somebody else has to come and take their place. And that might in some ways be the biggest issue for the Warriors, is that if a player misses time, whether that, you know, Steph Curry is probably the worst case scenario, but whoever it is, that they might be able to even just survive just on superlative individual talent with those players. But when you have to slide other players into to fill those gaps, it could create a really big problem. But as I said, I do think that is a legitimate thing to hand-wring about, but it is more of a regular season issue, because even players like David West, who was very successful in the regular season last year for the Spurs, probably will not be a big part of their postseason rotation, depending on what Coach Steve Kerr decides to do in the playoffs, and that is really an open question, too.
Yeah. Another thing I'm curious about from the Rockets' perspective is the coaching. Of course, J.B. Bickerstaff's out. They now have Mike D'Antoni and a cast of pretty good assistants. It's interesting with regards to the Warriors, because the Warriors, their turnaround year, had Alvin Gentry, a D'Antoni disciple, as really the architect of that offense. So I'm curious what the growing pains were like when Gentry went to the Warriors. What was the transition like? How was his offense received? Basically, your reflections on what the D'Antoni system, or the variation of it, because of course it wasn't D'Antoni, it's Gentry, what that system did for the Warriors, and what fair expectations might be for the Rockets this coming season.
You used it in a different context, but the word expectations is probably the functional word here. And the reason for that is Mark Jackson, despite having deserving credit for changing the Warriors' defensive philosophy, he didn't imprint in this team the expectation that they should get good shots every time down. Mm-hmm. And the biggest change in the Kerr-Gentry regime change, and at least offensively, was that they had to think about the way that their offense worked to a different degree. And that took a long time. There were players after that first offseason that were saying, you know, after they won the title, that there's still a lot more that we can do. And they went to, and they were the best offense in the league last year. So it took a long time to really break that mold of saying, okay, this is a pretty good look. Maybe there are, you know, 14 seconds left on the shot clock. I'll just take it. And you, part of how you have to change that is by actually doing it and just seeing the results. And it helps to have guys as good as the Warriors have. But that will be true also this year with Durant. He's going to be asked to play a very different system than he has before. They will probably task him with being a greater part of the offense than he has done in Oklahoma City, not in terms of usage, but in terms of moving the ball. And that's an adjustment. And so that was a big change. And we'll see what D'Antoni's imprint is on the Rockets. But if it's something of that nature, it can be good for everybody, because the expectation that the ball will find you when you're open and you can make a good shot, it does fuel players to engage more offensively and to play overall with more effort.
Good point. Turning to the other side of the floor, defense. I know a lot of teams in the past, with their defensive stoppers, in Houston that's considered Trevor Ariza, although Ariza's defense did slip a little bit last year. We can debate the reasons why, but still, even looking forward, Ariza is someone that certainly the Rockets depend on for defense. And in the past, if the games were meaningful, you would put Ariza on Stephen Curry for key stretches, because Curry was that guy. He was the straw that stirred the drink. And so if the other team had one of those wing defensive stoppers, a lot of the time he was where the man-on-man attention would be allocated. Now with Kevin Durant, and, you know, yes, of course there were Klay Thompson and Draymond Green before, but neither Klay or Draymond has the individual brilliance that Steph Curry or KD has. I guess I'm curious, would you anticipate someone like Ariza, or again, you can pick your stopper, you know, Iman Shumpert, go with any other quality defensive player, you know, a regular two or three wing, your 3-and-D guy from another team. Would you expect them to still spend time on Curry, or do you think that that Durant draws that kind of defender this year?
I hate to give the lawyer answer, but it really does depend on the player. Shumpert is a little bit smaller, and so he's pretty ineffectual on KD just because Durant's tall. He's a legit 7-footer.
True.
And so that is a constraint on some of those players. So guys like Amon will probably go on to Curry more often than Durant. But the real answer is that you're going to need two players, and there are not many NBA teams that can play, that can afford, especially with the general trade-offs that you have offensively, to do that. And there are a couple, you know, the Spurs could be one, and we'll see what happens in a couple other situations. If LeBron plays the way he did defensively in the finals, he could be another team that can do that with Amon Shumpert, as you just mentioned. And so we'll have to see how you handle that. And that also gets into the question of how the Warriors integrate actions that involve both Curry and Durant, because if you get into those spots, most teams, even if you have two talented defenders, you can't switch that action. You know, you can't really put one of, like, that other good defender on the other guy. Like, let's use Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley's a wonderful defender. Yep. Putting him on Kevin Durant isn't that useful.
Right.
So if you run a Curry-Durant pick and roll, how do you handle that? Because you have to think about the worst case scenarios and the best case scenarios, and if you consider the worst case scenario the ball handler getting an open shot, then you're leaning towards switching. But if the result of a switch is that you get Patrick Beverley on Kevin Durant, then that creates its own problems. And so how aggressively they pursue those kinds of mismatches, and that's going to be a big question early, but it's also going to be a major question late. Because there is, with this team that has expectations of, you know, a championship or something of that nature, they could keep a lot of that under wraps for basically the whole season, because the regular season doesn't have much resonance for them.
Yeah. Last question for me as it pertains to the Rockets and the Warriors. I think we can both agree that even if the Rockets surprise to the upside, and I could see them with the right health, good chemistry, pushing 50 wins and being, you know, a mid-tier playoff team in the West, the Rockets are not going to challenge the Warriors this year, barring some sort of major injury to Curry, Durant, something like that. I think we can agree that the Rockets' best-case scenario is still not at that top tier with Cleveland and Golden State and maybe San Antonio. But big picture, the Rockets and Warriors certainly know each other very well. They've played in the playoffs the last 2 years. Are the Rockets a bigger threat now moving forward than they were 4 months ago? And 4 months ago, of course, you had the team that finished 41-41, Dwight Howard seemingly on his way out. Are the Rockets at all better positioned, not just this year, but the next few years, to potentially make a run?
It's tough because they arguably raised their ceiling, but they also lowered their floor. And when you're talking about them as a contender, like with, let's say, making the Western Conference Finals or beating the Warriors and making the Finals, that higher ceiling actually matters, because a team is going to have to reach into that level to beat the best teams that are in the league right now, the Warriors, the Cavs, whoever else you want to put, the Spurs, you know, whatever. And so that could help them. You know, they have enough offensive firepower to have games where they just beat teams, where they can win 130 to 122. And that's fine. You know, there's merit. If you get the W, you get the W. But those will be high variance outcomes, because they just don't have the overall talent. And a player that I would point to as being a real hinge point for the Rockets making any sort of jump in that direction is Clint Capella. And Capella represents a player who can get a lot better than he was last year, and arguably that he is now. I haven't seen him, of course, this summer, because you need that sort of a step up from players to do it. And realistically, while last year was maybe a disappointment on the defensive end, James Harden offensively had a very good year, and of course 2 years ago won the players MVP, finished second in the real MVP voting, and so it's hard to expect that he will be much better than that. So you need players like Capella and Eric Gordon to really step into a role to make them really dangerous to the best teams in the league.
Excellent take. Danny, thanks as always for the time. I know you can be found on Twitter at Danny LaRue. For those who aren't following me, you can follow me on Twitter at Ben DuBose. Danny, thanks so much for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing.
Thanks again to Ben DuBose for taking the time to come on. You can follow him on Twitter at BENDUBOSE. And of course, you can listen to and subscribe to Locked On Rockets on iTunes, Audioboom, whatever you want to use to download your podcast. And it is really thrilling to be a part of the Locked On Podcast Network, because there's so many great people out there. And the rest of this week will be conversations with other Locked On hosts. I already have it lined up where I'm going to talk to Eric Gunderson, who does Locked On Blazers, the Warriors' second-round opponents, and working on the other guests for the rest of the week. And it's great to talk with those people and to get excited about the season, even though the regular season is still a month and a half away. But there is, of course, plenty more to discuss. And if you want to get excited for it, next week we'll be focused on position previews. It is an idea that we've been talking about as a network. It's something that Sean Hyken and I, who Sean does Locked On Bulls, and I have talked about back in Vegas when we were doing Team USA. And so we're going to go day by day, position by position, and going to have some great guests for that as well. So look forward to the rest of this week and the crossover episodes and next week. And something that will be an important part of Locked On Warriors is listener feedback and suggestions. And so I'm not exactly sure what form that is going to take yet. It will take a little bit of time. You can always reach out to me at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux, or DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. For your insight, thinking about doing Reddit mailbags, maybe Twitter mailbags, maybe Facebook. There is a Facebook page for Locked On Warriors. It is Locked On Warriors. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Locked On Dubs, LockedOnDubs. And it is a lot of exciting things to think about. I've done a daily podcast for a while now with Dunked On, but to do one on a specific team is a whole different endeavor, and fortunately, the Warriors will have plenty to talk about. So that will not be an issue, and the excitement that I've gotten from my media friends in terms of the opportunity to talk about this team has been great. So you will get a wide stable of different people, and of course, there will also be times where we have more to talk about in terms of games and everything else. And I wanted also, as I said, you know, listener feedback is going to be important for in this, let's say, month interim time before things really get crazy. If there are any topics that you want covered in more depth where it's not really a mailbag question, but it's maybe the subject of a segment or even a whole episode, let me know. And that is something that I would love to do, because while I have a lot of ideas, things that you think are important, are there probably other people listening that think the same thing? So reach out to me however you want to do that, however you see fit, and I will consider it, and the best ones will definitely become a part of episodes. So thank you so much for listening. Take care, and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.